Morning, Adam.
Morning, Laurie. Morning, TK.
Yeah, mate, with this Greg Inglis story, we've had a lot of text messages and we've sort of spoken a little bit about it this morning about, you know, the fact that he still had $1.5 million on his contract. He still had another year and a half to go, but he's walked away from that. Where does that leave South Sydney in terms of their salary cap position going forward?
Yeah, Laurie, they'll make submissions to the NRL in the next couple of weeks, and I'm led to believe the NRL will sort of make a decision in the next sort of 2 to 3 weeks to try and give them some more clarity. I suppose the really important thing to consider here is that I know there's been a lot of discussion about Greg's injuries with his shoulder and his knees, but he's been medically assessed as being capable to play on. Now, the fact that he's not playing on for the rest of the season and into 2020 is basically a decision of his own volition. So he's given up and sacrificing the rest of his contract and the money that was owed to him in that contract. So South always can make the argument saying that, well, Greg's retired of his own choice. He's not receiving any more money. He's walking away from his contract. He's fit enough to keep playing. He doesn't want to keep playing now. He's going to get some sort of off-field role with South, which we was mentioned yesterday, working with their South Cares. He'll do a bit of work as an Indigenous player mentor and help Wayne Bennett as a development coach. That salary he'll get, he'll just be treated like an off-field employee, basically, for South. So they're going to make the argument saying that, listen, we think his money in the cap should be excluded from the rest of the salary cap this year and also 2020, and the NRL will have to make a decision on that following that submission. If they do rule in his favour, that means they can replace GI on their roster, in the 30-man roster, by June 30. So it's a big decision. It's a very important decision for South if they can get it to go their way, and we'll wait and see what the NRL comes up with.
Yeah, other clubs would be waiting and listening intently too, wouldn't they?
Yeah, it's very interesting, Laurie, how it's going to work with other clubs. I don't know if he sets a precedent to say that, you know, if you've got a megastar and a big contract who walks away from sort of the final 2 years of his deal and decides to get an off-field role. Now, I suppose the important thing is that GI is just going to be treated like any other off-field employee with South. He'd probably be on, you know, just a reasonable salary, I'd imagine. I suppose if it comes to a point where clubs are trying to pay someone in a similar situation $500,000 to do an off-field role, then the NRL, the alarm bells will start raising them then, I suppose. But yeah, I can completely understand why other clubs will be watching. We'll wait and see what comes of it.
We'll be watching Godolphin on the weekend.
TK, unbelievable. They run with the 2-year-olds. And I thought about it the other day. They've won the Blue Diamond. They've won the Golden Slipper. They've won the Size Prodigy Stakes with three different individual horses. Now, they're going for the sweep of the 2-year-old Triple Crown in Sydney, as well as winning all 5 2-year-old Group 1 races this season in Australia. So they're only representative, it looks like, at this stage will be Flicked for James Cummings from the Champagne Stakes on Saturday at Randwick. Don't talk to me about that result on the weekend. I'm talking through self-interest, obviously. I would have liked to have seen her got the bob. But yeah, it'll be a big ask for her if she does back up from the Percy Sykes to the Champagne, given she's going from 1,200 metres to a mile in the space of 7 days, but she's a very, very talented filly. And it'd be some sort of achievement if they can win the Triple Crown in Sydney with different horses, with Kiamichi winning the Slipper and Microphone winning the Size. And if they can tick this box with the Champagne, all eyes will go to Brisbane and the JJ Atkins to see if they can win all 5 Group 1s for the 2-year-olds.
He's eminent, was disappointing in the Queen Elizabeth, but he's pressing on to Hong Kong?
Yeah, geez, he was disappointing, wasn't he, Laurie? I think Sir Mark Todd had mentioned after the race, his trainer, that the decision to put the earmuffs on him just backfired. He just completely missed the kick, and James McDonald couldn't get him into any sort of position. Then he wasn't a factor after that. I think his only real chance of running well in that Queen Elizabeth Stakes was getting up on the speed and rolling along. So connections have decided they're going to press on to Hong Kong and head over there for Champions Day in a couple of weeks and try and find a suitable race over there, and then maybe even keep going towards the Northern Hemisphere, towards Royal Ascot. But yeah, they're not unperturbed or undeterred by it. He's run on Saturday at Randwick with the Queen Elizabeth Stakes, and they don't want to press on to Hong Kong at this stage.
And don't get me wrong here, Mark Zara's entitled to appeal his suspension for causing that fall in race one at Randwick on the weekend, but I'm surprised he's actually appealing. But, of course, centre in a lane, he wants that ride in Hong Kong.
Yeah, it caught me a bit by surprise as well, TK, I must admit, yesterday. Obviously, a lot of people will say that suspension was fairly steep, given he was given 25 meetings and fined $3,800. But you're right, the big carrot for him is to try and get back on centre in a lane in a couple of weeks' time for the Champions meeting over there in Hong Kong. I don't know if I want to see this drag through the appeal process again and having to watch the vision and everything that goes with it. But Mark's got every right, he's entitled to appeal, and he's lodged that appeal with Racing New South Wales, and hopefully for his sake, he's hoping to get a reduction. But yeah, I don't know if we want to talk about it too much longer, just given the enormity of the scale of what the fall caused.
No, and it wasn't deliberate. It wasn't, well, it was close enough to reckless, actually. I think stewards even indicated that, but they've gone down the careless line of thinking, which is better for Mark, but a little bit surprised. But still, he's entitled to that appeal. So Aquis. This is a big story, isn't it, when you say the integrity of Queensland racing is not good enough for us to race our horses?
Got completely lost in the wash last week, TK, this story, and the build-up to Winx and the second day of the championship. But you're right, a very, very significant story. One of the major players in Australian racing, they're an emerging player, given how much money they're spending at yearling sales around the country, have decided that they don't want any of their horses to be racing in Queensland from now on with all the integrity issues up there. I suppose most people will point the finger at the Ben Curry case. It's been dragging on through the system up there for nigh on a year, probably going to be going closer to 18 months, 2 years by the time we get to the end of this calendar year. But yeah, they scratched all their runners from Queensland on the weekend there. They're still at a base up there in Queensland, but they just want to race their horses pretty much exclusively in New South Wales and Victoria. They'll take some to, obviously, Adelaide and Perth for the carnivals. But, geez, it's a huge blow for Queensland racing when a major stud farm like that just turns you back on the state and says, I don't want our horses racing there.
You're right there. Hopefully, they will regain that confidence, have their runners back up there as soon as possible. Thanks again, mate. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, sorry. Thanks, TK.